From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Every year, members of the Illinois General Assembly introduce literally thousands of bills. I went online this morning, chose at random the list of Senate bills in the 2,800 range. There are proposals on composting and lobbying regulations, reckless driving and horse racing, signage on bike trails, and free speech on campus. None of those ideas made it through the process to become a law. And you know what? That's fine, because when it comes down to it, the General Assembly really only has one job every year, and that is passing a budget for state government. As we discussed on the program a few weeks ago, passing a budget this year was a difficult process, with multiple rounds of voting into the early morning hours. But they got it done, and Governor J.B. Pritzker signed it into law earlier this month.
For the sixth consecutive year, I will sign a balanced budget that continues our state's fiscal progress while putting money back in the hands of hardworking Illinoisans.
Today on the program, we're going to take a deep dive into the state budget and test Governor Pritzker's assertions there. We'll also find out what lawmakers prioritized, whether they put off any hard choices, and just who the winners and losers are of this year's state budgeting process. Joining me now are two longtime observers of Illinois' fiscal scene. Ralph Martiri is executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. This is a think tank. I think it's fair to say it has a center-left perspective, but in the two decades I've been following their work, I've always found them to be intellectually honest and based in fact. Ralph, welcome. Great to talk to you again.
Great, Brett. Thanks for having us on the program.
Also with me, David Merriman, professor at the University of Illinois Chicago, interim director, I think, still of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. That's the U of I Systems think tank. David was last with us for Governor Pritzker's budget address, so it's nice to close the circle with you on this today. Welcome.
Thanks. Yep, that's right. I'm still interim director for couple more months.
All right. Well, listeners, if you have a question or comment about how the state of Illinois raises and spends money, now is your chance to talk with an expert about it. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Ralph Martiri, I want to begin with you. Big picture, give us a broad overview of some of the key parts of the new state budget that Governor Pritzker signed into law that stuck out to you this year.
I think the first thing I really want to highlight is for the first time in about 30 years, the state budget is actually balanced. So the governor was correct to state that. You go back and look at the GAAP accounting basis of the state's books, what you see is that from 1990 forward, every year the state ran a deficit and it carried forward into the next year. However, given the amount of revenue they have coming in this year against the expenses they have and the very minor bills carried forward from last year, this year's budget is honestly balanced. It's the first time I can say that in the 20 some odd years I've been looking at the state's budget. So they actually do have a balanced budget. Now, it did require them to raise some new revenue. They raised just over $820 million in new revenue by, bumping up some taxes on the sports books and including the net operating loss carry forward in the new budget and putting a cap on the retailer's discount, which is the money businesses get to keep for collecting the sales tax for the state. But the bottom line is that revenue was needed to support creating a truly balanced budget. And the budget doesn't spend a ton more than last year. I think that's another big point. And if you look at it just on a nominal dollar basis, they're going to spend about $53.1 billion this year, about $1.85 billion more than last year. That's 3.6% in nominal dollars. Inflation last year at the CPI was 3.4%. So basically, they stayed even with inflation on a year-to-year basis. No real increase in spending. But they have been very fiscally responsible, the Pritzker administration. Probably, I'd like to know what David thinks about this, but I think the most fiscally responsible administration I've seen since I've been watching state government in the year 2000. They've made additional contributions into the pension systems over and above what they were required to make by some $700 million over the last couple of years. They bumped up the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund by $1.36 billion. They paid a backlog of bills that was over $8 billion. They got 9 credit upgrades. And they took the state's rainy day fund, which really isn't a rainy day fund. It's a cash flow fund. But they call it a rainy day fund. which was zeroed out under Governor Rauner. We had no money set aside for emergencies under Governor Rauner, and it's now up to $2.3 billion. So it's a pretty responsible approach to fiscal policy management. And for once, we actually have a balanced budget.
An actual balanced budget. All right, David Merriman, let me bring you into the conversation now. So we heard Ralph there talking about the budget actually being balanced when you look at GAAP. That's generally accepted accounting principles. And he says it's his first time, maybe the most fiscally responsible administration. I think that's maybe a low bar in the past couple of decades here in Illinois. But what do you think about that, David?
Well, I'd agree with Ralph that things are far better than they've been in the past in terms of the kind of fiscal situation of the state. I will point out that budgets are plans. So I'm less concerned about whether the plan is balanced than whether the implementation of the plan is balanced. And, you know, we won't know that for a year or more in terms of like, can they actually do it? But yeah, I mean, we've been doing some hard looks at the fiscal situation of the state. And I think it is in pretty good shape. One thing, you know, that it's nice to give Governor Pritzker credit, and I do, but I think a lot of the credit, oddly, is the result of the COVID pandemic and the large federal bailouts that came in, a large amount of money that came into the state. And I think what the administration gets credit for is not blowing it. Basically, they took that money and they used it, it seems, in a responsible way. And it looks like we do have a good chance to prove that we're fiscally sustainable over the next few years. But I'm a little bit taking a wait and see attitude. I'd say the one caution for me, or maybe not the only one, is that COVID really put a dent in public transit systems, finances. It also did a lot of damage to learning in the schools. And these are primarily local government problems, but I think the state has a responsibility to see how it can help out. And that's certainly not been dealt with yet. So we're going to have to deal with that in the coming years. And that's going to put a strain on finances in the state.
Okay, there's a lot I want to come back to later in the conversation, the so-called fiscal cliff and transit, as you mentioned there, other local government challenges. I want to stick with the main budget for now. And Ralph, let's come back. You hinted at some of these. Let's go a little deeper, though, on the nearly $750 million in tax increases. These are not, you know, the sort of the sales tax, the income tax, the things that most people pay attention to. Can you just talk a little bit more about what these tax increases entail and, you know, what effect people are hoping that they'll have on state finances?
Yeah, well, the first one that got a lot of press because the lobbyists, surprise, surprise, were heavily involved was the change in the tax rate for the sports books. We went up from having a flat rate system to one that's going to be graduated from a low of 20% to a high of 40% based on the adjusted gross receipts, which is the money left after paying winnings of the sports books. Now, this is a hugely profitable industry, and this change in tax policy alone is projected to raise about $200 million annually in new revenue. Sports books revenue more than doubled their first year in Illinois. Now it's close up to $1 billion, and a bunch of the lobbyists, whenever you try to raise taxes on any business entity, they're like, oh, you're going to kill the industry, you're going to kill our business, blah, blah, blah. Yet the data to support those claims just doesn't exist. It's just a nice claim to make, because I've yet to meet the politician who's run for public office in either party, as the I'm the job killer, business killer candidate. So it usually gets a receptive ear of the voters. But, you know, New York State has a 53% tax rate on sportsbook. And you haven't seen the FanDuels and the other big sports books running, screaming out of New York State. And Illinois has the fifth largest economy of any state in America. We're now north of $1 trillion in our economy. No way the sports books are leaving here. It's, you know, their profit will be slightly lower, but some of that money will go to cover the public services funded by the general fund. And that's a good thing if you think about it, because about 94%, or think about it, 94 cents of every dollar spent through our general fund on services goes to one of four big categories: education, healthcare, social services, and public safety. So the money on services is spent incredibly well. and having recurring revenue to cover it is a great thing. Then there's the net operating loss.
Before you get to the guy, let me ask about, though, the sports books. So maybe the DraftKings come through all right. What about the smaller sports books? You know, the ones that are just getting started, the local.
They just saw their rate lower from 30% under prior law to 20%. You know, and if they can grow their gross adjusted gross receipts, they're doing fine. And remember, this is their adjusted gross receipts that the tax applies to. So it's what they have left after paying off winners. And, you know, if their administrative costs and other operating costs are such that there's nothing left after paying off winners, they ought not be in the sportsbook industry, from what I could tell. So there's no way, no how this is going to harm one business in Illinois, nor lead to the loss of one job or position. It's just not. I think that's a bunch of hyperbole. We've heard this kind of hyperbole in the past. Interesting. I like to do it the other way. Think about all the times you've heard a politician in both parties, by the way, this is a bipartisan problem, claim that they're going to improve our economy and create jobs by cutting business taxes. Have you heard that before? Okay.
Once
there's
or twice,
no statistically, there's no statistically meaningful correlation between taxes on businesses and whether or not they create jobs. In fact, the Small Business Administration did this major study of tax changes at the federal level over decades. And they said, gee, we've really determined the only thing that actually has a statistically meaningful correlation to and incentivizing a business to hire more people. Now, I hope everyone's seated that's listening to this program now. The one thing is growth in demand for whatever the business is selling. Apparently, Microeconomics 101 knows what they're talking about. And businesses will expand their capacity to, you know, meet growing demand. If they don't have growing demand and you cut their taxes, why should they hire more people? They won't. There's no reason. That's wasting a sort of revenue that could be used for profits, which is what they do. They profit take, they buy back their own stock or whatever. So this whole discussion about the interrelationship between tax policy and business, I think, is frequently not based on the facts. The facts will set you free and sort of create a rubric for you to follow and what you should do with your tax policy. So I'm not buying anything that the lobbyists for the businesses that represent the sports books are saying on this one.
Yeah. All right, David Merriman, let me bring you back into the conversation. Looking at the sort of the bigger picture of all the tax increases or revenue enhancements, as the lawmakers like to euphemize it, what anything jump out to you this year in particular?
I guess in terms of public policy, the thing that I found most sort of puzzling and in some ways disturbing was the pairing of the cut in the retailers. Ralph mentioned this before, the reimbursement retailers get for doing collecting sales tax, which that you know, I'm not saying that's a bad policy. That seems reasonable that it's to cut the reimbursement to retailers. There's computers. It's a lot easier to figure out how much sales tax you need to remit to the state. Record keeping's easier, and Illinois was relatively high on that. But then the pairing of that with this new policy about credit cards, which basically says that the credit card companies can't charge their fees on tips and tax. So for a restaurant, that's probably going to typically be about 30% of their revenue. So 30% of the credit card bill is likely to be tips and tax. And so the credit card companies have sort of taken this hit. And it seems to me it's bothersome because not that I'm particularly worried about the credit card companies, but I think it just makes things more complex. The credit card companies will find another way to get their revenue out of the retailers. And it's kind of cutesy on the part of the administration. And apparently there was, you know, not very much background research about it, hasn't been done in other places. And it just seems like something that was done for political reasons. So I think that's the kind of, that kind of tax policy discussion, I think, or tax policy implementation happens too often. And so that kind of bothered me the most of all the other things I've seen. I think the other thing, and Ralph and I could probably have a discussion about the net operating losses for businesses. That's a, probably, it's a lot more money, but it's always been a policy that I think is not well grounded in kind of thinking about what the economic effects of it are, or or the equity effects.
Yeah. I'm sitting here trying to decide how interested are my listeners in really doing a deep dive discussion on the net operating loss for business tax policy of Illinois.
I think that's one of the problems is right. Yeah. And not to, you know, disrespect your visitors at all, but there's a lot of things that don't seem very important to the average person, but can have a real effect on economic activity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
well, we need to take a break, so we'll have 90 seconds to think about whether we want to carry on that discussion here. We are talking with David Merriman of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois System and Ralph Martiri with the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, taking a deep dive into the Illinois budget for the next fiscal year that begins July 1st. This is the 21st Show. We're going to continue after a break. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are taking a deep dive into the Illinois state budget for fiscal year 25. That was the one that the General Assembly passed in May. Governor Pritzker signed it into law a couple of weeks ago. It goes into effect on July 1st this summer. Happy fiscal new year in advance. We're talking about this with Ralph Martiri, Executive Director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, a think tank that looks at and advocates around these issues, and David Merriman, who is a professor at the University of Illinois Chicago and Interim Director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, the think tank for the U of I system. And we've got about 15, 16 minutes left. I do want to talk about a little bit about pensions, the overall sort of tax picture in Illinois. I know you all have opinions on that and some of the long-term challenges. I don't know if we want to get too much into the other source of revenue. Ralph, if you want to, maybe we can just have a brief discussion about this, the loss. Remind me of the exact phrase.
Net operating loss. Thank you.
Yes.
Forward.
Yes, exactly. So, it's like I'm a smart 13-year-old. Help me understand that.
It's a tax expenditure that, as far as I'm concerned, it serves no useful purpose. You're spending through the tax code when you provide any sort of break, whether it's to an individual or a person. And what you want to do is generate a public benefit from it. And these businesses, there's very few businesses in Illinois that actually pay the corporate income tax. Vast majority of businesses have no income tax liability whatsoever. It's only the really, really big C corporations. S corporations are exempt, partnerships are exempt, limited liability companies are exempt. So you're talking about really big, really profitable businesses subject to a 7% tax on their net profit after their accountant was able to take advantage of every deduction available under the sun. So I feel no pain in my heart for the loss of this net operating loss carry forward. In fact, Pritzker made it more generous. Under prior law, it was capped at $100,000. Now they cap it at $500,000. I mean, you know, if you can take $500,000 of your loss from one year and offset it against profits you have made in the next year, I don't know what that does for the economy. I could think probably nothing, but it does make your stockholders happy. So I am happy to see that go the way of the dinosaur. And I think we ought to keep a cap on the NOL carry forward if allowed at all. I do want to, David, you've been the only one that's been able to say anything that says, but, you know, things are fiscally good, but I'm usually the one that says the but. So I want to throw a but on the table so I can join you in having a little bit of caution out there. You look at where the state spends its money, and I think this is a big deal. One of the big changes in state law in the last few years has been the adoption of a new education funding formula for K-12 called the evidence-based model. And the evidence-based model ties the amount of money that we as taxpayers invest in educating our kids to covering the cost of those practices, which the research or evidence show actually enhance student outcomes over time. So we're funding what works. It's a really good model. It's probably the best model in the country. Well, by law, we're supposed to increase our annual K-12 funding by $350 million every year over the prior year. $50 million of that doesn't go to schools. It's used for property tax relief statewide. So $300 million actually goes to increasing K-12 education. Another thing that funds K-12 education is another tax on business we haven't mentioned, the corporate property personal replacement tax, CPPRT. Back before our 1970 Constitution, local governments used to tax personal property of businesses. Businesses said, don't do that. It's a fixed cost, tax our profits. So we did replace it with a local profit tax base. That has exploded in the last few years. And for school districts, it has increased revenue by over 200% in the last couple of years. The amount of money from the state going into K-12 education has had to be less because this local source has gone up. Well, guess what? It was a bubble. And now CPPRT revenue is projected to go down. Next year, in fact, it will be $400 million less than it was last year. Well, we're only putting $300 million more into the formula. So on a net basis, that's a $100 million loss to K-12 education on a year-to-year basis, looking at these two major revenue sources. Now, there are still property tax revenues that are growing that'll fund schools, but we don't, in Illinois in particular, we don't want to continue over-relying on this local property tax source to fund education. We are still very much the outlier in the country where only about 26, 27% of the cost of K-12 education is actually paid for by state taxes, and about 65, 64% is paid at the local level. That's way off the national averages where states cover 46% from state revenue and 44% from property tax revenue. This has artificially driven our property tax burden high. And it's really a problem when you look at the tax policy in Illinois, because overall, state and local tax burden as a percentage of income in Illinois, when you look at every tax and fee, we're middling. We're about 27th, 28th in the nation. But if you isolate out that property tax, we jump up to top three in the country. So you just don't want to be over-reliant on the property tax to fund anything. There's a lot of distortions that does create economically and from a fiscal policy standpoint. Yet, we haven't really put enough money into the EBF, the evidence-based funding formula, at the state level to drive down the over-reliance on property taxes. And I do think that state should raise adequate state-based revenue to make a much greater investment in K-12 through the EBF and drive down this long-term reliance on property.
Well, the education funding pressure is one area of state government, and there are those who say another area that's crowding out spending, for example, on education, is what we still pay servicing the pension debt. I guess debt's not really the right term, but the long-term liabilities of the pension system. Full disclosure, I'm a member of the state university retirement system, as are the producers on our program, and I presume David Merriman is as well, as a University of Illinois employee. But David, we haven't heard as much about the pensions as we did 10, 15 years ago. And in fact, Governor Pritzker, one of the things he talked about at that news conference this year was how the situation seems to be improving slightly, slowly. Where are we with this topic that used to take up so much mind share in our state fiscal discussions?
Well, of course, the big change that happened in 2011 was that we put in a second tier pension, a tier two, and those pensions are much less generous than tier one. And so essentially, in my view, we're working off the debt that we had from tier one. Tier two is more than paying for itself. And I think that we're just going to have to wait it out. The pensions as a share of the general fund are relatively large. I guess they're about $9 or $10 billion out of a $50 billion budget. But my view is it's not a crisis. It hasn't been a crisis for a long time. And we're just going to kind of live with that going forward. So I think it's appropriate that we're talking about it a lot less. Now, is the tier two pension system appropriate? Is it sufficient?
Will there be a bill that comes due with the Social Security?
Separate question.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Well, because many state workers are not in the Social Security system. And we know that we have a kind of a crisis with people having enough money for retirement around the country. It's not exclusive to state workers. It's not exclusive to Illinois. And we haven't solved that problem. And tier two is a pretty, for many workers, it will be insufficient to support them in retirement.
Ralph, I want to touch on another, or go ahead if you want to wait.
Can I jump in on the pension stuff? Because it's a big deal. And so the current ramp that we have in place that passed in 1995 to pay back the debt that's owed to the pension system is not affordable. The state can't make the payments through the end of that ramp. They're going to have to raise taxes to make the payments. And these payments were not caused by anything in the design of the pension system. I mean, this is not a pension problem. It's a debt service problem. Back in 1995, when Edgar got together with Madigan and said, gee, our pension system are underfunded. Generally speaking, a pension system is considered healthy if it's funded anywhere at 80% or above, depending on who you're asking. Actuaries want it to always be 100% funded. The federal government has an 80% standard, so does Standard & Poor's, et cetera, et cetera. So it depends on who you talk to. But it's supposed to be funded at 80 to 100%. Well, we were only 54% funded back in. They said, we got to pay back what we haven't put into these systems for years. And they didn't put money into the systems because they had a structural imbalance between their revenue growth and their tax growth. And rather than raise taxes, because that's politically hard to do, or eviscerate spending when 94 cents out of every dollar goes to education, health, social services, and public safety, they literally borrowed against what they owed the pension system. They put the money that should have gone into the pension system as a contribution and instead diverted it to cover current operation costs on services and then wrote an IOU to the pension system. Well, we are now worse funded than we were back in 1995. We're only 42% funded. Why? For the first 15 to 18 years of that pension ramp, they by law continued to underfund the contribution they were required to put in. So if you look at the $142 billion in debt that's owed to the pension systems, almost $58 billion of that, 42%, is simply from not making the contribution. Benefits? You know how much that cost in jumping up this unfunded liability? $5 billion. Salary increases actually saved us $5 billion because our headcount is down so low. So the bottom line is, until we deal with the structure of this debt, we will have a pension funding crisis, but it really should be recast as a debt service funding crisis, not a pension crisis. And that debt was incurred to fund what? Education, health, social services, and public safety. So that's how they use the money. The second thing is those costs are going to be higher than what's in the current ramp because the tier two system that David Merriman mentioned is well below the safe harbor established by Social Security to exempt employees from enrolling in Social Security. Now, the state hired an independent consultant that came to this conclusion. We actually reran the numbers that the consultant did. We put a report on it. It's very clear that we run afoul of the Social Security safe harbor. And as David correctly said, the majority of state workers are not enrolled in Social Security, like 73, 74% of them, including every teacher in the state of Illinois. So the bottom line is, if we suddenly have to put all these folks in Social Security, that's a huge cost. So tier two has to be increased so we could at least get back into that safe harbor. But that's probably not good policy, and I'll tell you why. We have a teacher shortage right now in Illinois of close to 4,000 teachers overall. We have an additional shortage of teacher aides of about 3,200. We have a shortage of bilingual teachers that's pushing 4,000. We have a shortage of state workers of 7,000. So if your pension system is providing this woefully inadequate benefit, it is becoming a deterrent in hiring a high quality faculty, a high quality workforce for your state. So I think when they do the tier two fix, it would behoove state decision makers to say, as part of a compensation package in conjunction with the salaries being paid, how does this help us attract and retain high-quality workforce for the state generally, but for teachers specifically? And that decision has to be made. And then whatever the cost is of funding the fix to Tier 2 has to be now amortized. And you have to come up with a rational payment plan for getting to the end of the game being your system is fully funded 100%. So I do think it's still a problem, and I do think it's a debt service problem. It is not really a pension problem, but it is got some pension elements in it because the debt's owed to the pension system, number one. And number two, the cost of fixing it went up because tier two is really running afoul of the Social Security safe harbor. So I think those things need to be discussed intelligently at the state level. I do think there are rational solutions. My organization put one out there that flattened out the payment curve, saved us $40 billion, still got us, you know, 90% funded. They should do that. They should front load some more costs and flatten out the payment curve. But the bottom line is they should do all that reamortization of the pension debt after they figure out how they're fixing tier.
All right, just a couple of minutes left in our time together, and I want to give you both a chance. There's so much we didn't get to talk about. Maybe we can have you back at some point and talk about, you know, the possibilities of a service tax in Illinois and really a deep dive into the revenue structure here, which a lot of people think needs to be more modernized, I guess, is how some say it. But David Merriman, what are you watching out for? We talked about that fiscal cliff with transit in particular. I don't know if you want to mention that, or what are you going to be looking for as we see how this budget is implemented in the next year?
Yeah, I think to me, the biggest financial issues are how the local governments can deal with three things. I would say funding public transit when ridership is down, and this is mostly a problem in the Chicago metropolitan area, but that's the bulk of the monetary problem. The second thing is what we do to deal with the learning losses that we had from the pandemic, from kids being out of in-class during the pandemic. So those are the real two biggest things. I think the third thing is what we're going to do about commercial real estate and property taxes as people are working from home, and commercial real estate really has to make an adaptation to this. And that's a challenge for local governments. So to me right now, the problem is how the state, the thing I'll be looking at is how much can the state help local governments deal with this kind of issue?
Ralph Martiri, like a senior citizen on a fixed income, we are on a fixed clock. So about 45 seconds, and I'm going to hold you to it. What are you watching for in the next year from the state of Illinois?
If we could actually have an adult conversation about tax policy, there are four basic economic principles of tax policy. They need to be fair, responsive, stable, and efficient. Illinois is 0 for 4. You're 0 for 4, your tax system's not going to work in a modern economy, and ours does not. It does create a structural imbalance. So yes, we do have to look at that service tax base and expand it to include consumer services. Yes, we have to look at growing more revenue from our income tax. We probably can't get a progressive rate structure right now, but we could bump up the rate and create refundable tax credits for low and moderate income families. That creates the same sort of thing. We have to get off our addiction to property taxes to funding K-12 education and put far more state money in that. And then we have to find, and David won't say this, but I will, a rational and better way to fund higher education in Illinois. Our public universities have really taken the brunt of budget cuts over the last 40 years, even after this year's budget, they will be down well over 40% in real terms from funding from the state from where they were back in the year 2000 under Republican Governor George Bryan. So I think those are some of the big things I'm looking for.
Ralph Martiri and David Merriman, it's been a deep conversation. I appreciate both of your time. Thank you so much. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.